Business Matters, in association with Donegal ETBs for their education and training service, developing the Donegal workforce across the engineering, hospitality, manufacturing, retail, services, technology and agricultural sectors.
Hi, I'm Kieran O'Donnell. You're welcome to Business Matters. On this week's programme, I'll be talking to Garrett Hart of Hart Media and Dahi Ramsey, box office and marketing manager at Ingredient Theatre. And for this week's Backing Business segment, I'll be joined by Adult Guidance Counsellor and Coordinator of Donegal ETB's Adult Guidance and Information Service, Deirdre McColgan. Tech Northwest Skillnet and the CoLab and Letterkenny have joined forces to create a new mentoring programme focusing on management and leadership for tech company owners in Donegal, Sligo and Leitrim. Leading out on the initiative is former Editor-in-Chief at Newstalk, Garrett Hart, who now runs Hart Media, a strategic communications and management consultancy. Garrett began by explaining that 10 tech leaders will take part in the programme over the next 6 months.
Yeah, this is a new initiative that Skillnet and the CoLab have partnered on to create a leadership programme for tech leaders in the Northwest. And the programme will work with 10 tech business owners and tech startups over the period of the next 6 months, where we'll bring in key master class speakers. There'll be a series of workshops challenging the business leaders to think outside their current business. And the whole purpose of the initiative is to ask these leaders, have they got a business geared in the right direction, and how do they communicate that message publicly?
Are there key areas that tech leaders in the Northwest region, Garrett, need to be focusing on at this time?
I suppose what I would say, and it's not specific to tech leaders, but there are some fantastic businesses up here, Kieran, and you know, I'm originally from Donegal, as you know, and you know, we're sitting in the CoLab offices here in Letterkenny, and I went to St. Eunan's about 10 years behind you, Kieran. But when I come up here now and I see the businesses here, I see the initiatives, I meet these tech entrepreneurs that I knew were here, but when you actually meet them and hear about their plans, their ambitions, the brands, the global brands that they've signed up, there's a massive story to be told. So the first thing I'd be saying is the business leaders, the tech owners, tech business owners, that they need to tell their story. They need to understand the importance of telling your story and the importance of telling that story in a consistent way, and that there is what I would call a drumbeat of communication. The second piece is understanding their audience. So who actually do you want to communicate with? Where are they? What do they engage with in terms of media? Are they on social media? Is it traditional media? And how do you build that audience? And the third piece is the impact. What do you want those people to do when they hear you, read about you, watch a video about you? So those are the three components, you know, understanding the story you want to tell, the audience you want to target, and the impact you want them to deliver.
Garrett, you spent a long time yourself in the media sector, UTV, TV3, before moving to be part of the startup team at Newstalk back in 2001. Can you talk to me a bit about that time?
Well, Newstalk, I was the first person that joined Newstalk before it even had a name, before really we had a clear idea of what we were about. It was an idea, it was a concept to create an alternative talk and news outlet to the state broadcaster, RTE, that it would be an independent media. So it was hugely exciting in a startup sense. So we created a media brand from a blank piece of paper. We had some fantastic people who worked there, from David McWilliams, who started out there, to George Hook, Claire Byrne, Ivan Yates, Off the Ball, Bobby Kerr, lots of producers who've gone on to bigger and better things. So the idea with Newstalk was it would be a counter to RTE. And everything we did, we had to do with RTE in mind, because if they were doing content in one way and doing it well, then there wasn't a reason or a purpose for us to exist. So what I would say a lot of times with businesses and CEOs that I work with now, you need to understand who your competitor is, because if you don't know who your competitor is and know them intimately, so you won't be able to run your own business.
Is that something that business owners and business leaders get wrong sometimes?
I'm not sure they get it wrong, but it's the amount of time that you can spend working in your own business but not on your own business, and there's a difference. For us in Newstalk, we would have had a quarterly session where we did what we called war rooming, and we would take a business that we felt could be a competitor of ours, it may be outside of traditional broadcast media, and we would actually assume the roles of those people and pretend for a day that we were actually that business and how we would be looking back at Newstalk. And again, for lots of businesses, finding out who that disruptor is in your sector and who could do your business better, more efficiently, is a worthy exercise. For us in Newstalk, our simple filter was if we sounded anything like Newstalk, even though that may have been a high-quality interview with the Taoiseach, or it may have been an interview with Bill Clinton, may have been an interview with Roy Keane, if we sounded the same as the RTE interview, then we'd failed.
Was that a strategy that was adopted earlier on and carried through?
No, it was something that evolved, because we learned as we went along, and we made lots of mistakes. But it certainly, it propelled us into a position where we could stand up and say, the reason Newstalk exists is because we are a counter to RTE.
And why was Newstalk so successful, and why is it so successful?
I think the brand of radio was very much that we wanted to be in the position of the person sitting at home and what question they wanted to ask. It wasn't so much that we were anti-establishment, because that's maybe the wrong description, but we challenged the establishment. We challenged the Ireland Inc. and the let's say the institutions, and it was no longer a case that if a senior figure came on that they would be treated with maybe the deference that maybe happened in the past. We also decided that we wanted to create personality radio. So a lot of our presenters had never presented a radio show before, had never, they may have been, you know, Ivan Yates was a former politician who had a point of view that, that was important. David McWilliams was, you know, or is an economist. But we wanted to be conversational radio.
Resilience is a word that you have attached huge importance to. Why is resilience so important now than ever before for businesses?
I think, the obvious one is the circumstance that we found ourselves in over the last 14, 15 months with COVID. Lots of business owners who have never had to deal with stress, have never had to deal with, you know, going to their bank to talk about restructuring their business, have all been propelled into that space, and it's very unsettling. The positive thing is the whole world ended up in that space. You know, it wasn't that one sector or one country. It wasn't like the bank bailout where Ireland was left, you know, adrift. So resilience is needed, and resilience for me comes in the form of finding good people around you, identifying good people around you, people who can then mentor you, and your go-to people when you're under pressure. And that builds up resilience. And I think the whole area of mentoring is one that has been underutilized and maybe misunderstood in Ireland. It was almost viewed as a failure that you had to go and find a mentor to help you with your business. In actual fact, it's I would say, a mandatory requirement to help you grow your business, that you're finding someone with a better skill set who's done it before and who can say, look, maybe you should do it a different way.
You have a very clear picture in relation to what a mentoring process should be, and maybe have more than one mentor, Garrett.
Yeah, look, for me, there's three mentors. There's there's what I call the Jedi for all those Star Wars fans, and that's the old wise one who has years of experience, has all the war wounds and the war stories, and they have no interest in your business other than ensuring that they can see you flourish, and that's the only return they want, is to see, you know, a positive response from you. The second is the coach, so that's your Ollie Horgan, who's in your corner. That's the coach. That's the guy who's going to drive you, push you. On a Monday morning, is going to check in with you and say, "Come on, what are we doing this week?" And then the third is the apprentice, and that's someone who's starting out, who maybe is in an area that you're not that au fait with. Could be digital, could be social media, and you're going to learn from them. And you surround yourself with those three. You engage with them proactively. They're part of your business setup, and they're your go-to people.
Is this a strategy that you see more and more businesses adopting over the next number of years?
I would hope so. The mentor relationship is one that you see in the United States, and having huge value. Even in education, where you have people who come in and talk about mentorship in academia. But I think for startups in particular, when you're under pressure, and I have a good friend of mine, Parag Okeja, when I was starting my own business, he said, "I'll give you two pieces of advice." Garrett said, "Your business, it will take you 3 years to set up your own business. And the idea you have today will be different in 3 years' time." Now, you need to be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, "I've got the cojones to do this." And the second piece of advice he gave me was, "You're going to have 20 sleepless nights in year one, and also in year two, and actually every year." And he said, "If you're an entrepreneur at the highest level who has scaled your business up, you're still going to have those 20 sleepless nights." So for entrepreneurs, startup, business owners, that fear factor drives you on, but also sometimes you just need to have someone in your corner who's going to give you a dig out.
What can the participants in the Tech Northwest SkillNet Training and Mentoring Program that you're going to lead out, what can they expect to take away, Gareth, when they're finished?
Well, we're going to hear from some really significant guest speakers who, at the moment, we can't announce just yet, but we'll announce over the next couple of weeks. They're going to hear their stories, and they're going to have an opportunity to engage with them in a Q&A session, and that's really special because these people are high profile in the sector. That's the first piece. The second piece is the group, and it'll be 8 or 10 tech leaders, are going to be working with each other. So we're going to challenge each other on our own businesses, and we're going to do a little bit of that war rooming that I discussed before. So again, I think there's going to be value out of that. And the third piece is that there's a confidence to know what your value proposition is and understand the need to build that drumbeat of communication strategy to communicate externally.
Communication is a key area, and communication is another factor that you believe is extremely important when it comes to getting a message out.
100%. Like I use the point that just because we're in pause from a business perspective, doesn't mean that you don't communicate, and never underestimate the fact that there's vast majority of people out there who have never heard your business, don't know who your business is. You've spent so much time in your business, so you need to communicate again and again, and build up that brand reputation.
Is there a launch date, Peslin?
The launch date is May 17th, Kieran, and we'll be revealing the list of guest speakers at that, and then the course will run over the course of the year. We'll do some sessions in May and June, and then pick it up again in September, and it'll run until the end of the year.
Gareth, see that you're in the business of giving advice now. What words of advice would you give your 21-year-old self?
Good question, Kieran. What I would say to my 21-year-old self is always back yourself. It's probably something that we struggle with at lots of stages in our life. But backing yourself and trusting your gut instinct are hugely important for me and have been drivers for me. And the other piece would be embrace risk as a learning, not as a negative. Like, take on risk, be willing to fall at that hurdle, but actually think, this was good, I want to go again.
And finally, Gareth, what lies ahead for yourself and your business?
I'm in a growth phase, Kieran. My business is very much in its infancy. I'm bringing the skills I had of running a big business like News Talk and taking those skills and transferring them into helping other businesses. So growing my own business is the plan over the next 5 years.
And very finally, enjoying the trip back from the smoke back to Donegal on Letterkenny?
Absolutely. Look, the opportunity to come up home again, spend the weekend with my 90-year-old mother in Raphoe and have the crack there, you can never turn those opportunities down, Kieran.
Gareth Hart, owner of Hart Media, thanks again for joining us on Business Matters.
Thank you, Kieran.
Next up is our backing business segment, and joining me on the line is Adult Guidance Counsellor and Coordinator of Donegal ETB's Adult Guidance and Information Service, Deirdre McCaughan. Deirdre, you're welcome to Business Matters.
Hi, Kieran. Thanks so very much for talking to me today.
Deirdre, Donegal ETB's Further Education and Training Service plays a vital role alongside your colleagues in enterprise engagement, programme development and course delivery and meeting the needs of local businesses here. Can you tell me a bit about the side of Donegal ETB, perhaps, and what's involved in the role of the Adult Guidance Counsellor?
I certainly can, Kieran. Thank you. And thanks for asking. I suppose I could say we have a wee bit of a dual role, really, Kieran. As you may have heard in the press recently, the government released a new Further Education and Training Strategy, which has put a huge emphasis on the upskilling and reskilling of our workforce, whether that's locally, regionally or nationally. And it's really to meet the needs of a global economy. And again, as you know, the world of work was really in transition before COVID, but it has just changed so drastically for many people in the last 14 months. And I suppose the role of an adult guidance counsellor, both pre and post COVID, is to work with local businesses who are navigating these changes. We can help people identify their strengths, transferable skills, and discuss opportunities to validate maybe the experiential learning they have in their workplace through initiatives such as recognition of prior learning. And I know this can be really beneficial for people who may find themselves, unfortunately, in a redundancy situation. And we are working with a couple of multinationals in this way at the minute. But the other side of that really also is, Kieran, we are just the biggest advocates for the further education and training students and the talent pool that we have here in Donegal ETB. We're the largest provider of further education and training in the county, Kieran, and our programmes are quality assured and they offer certification that's recognised across the world. So for us as guidance counsellors, it's really important that we highlight the calibre and the readiness of our students on levels 4, 5 and 6 programmes for employment. You know, like the teachers and the instructors look after the certification and the qualifications, but it's the professionally trained guidance counsellors that work on vocational awareness, personal development and maybe the job seeking skills of the students in our programmes. We have a wee employability tool called Tick That Box that is under constant review and update just to make sure that we are giving the local businesses here in Donegal potential employees that can demonstrate both their qualifications to do the job and their personal suitability for the positions being advertised.
So how successful has this approach been to date, Deirdre?
It's going great, and pre-COVID it was going fantastic. I mean, for example, in 2019, the Adult Guidance and Information Service hosted a fantastic event in conjunction with Donegal County Childcare Committee, where we brought together our QQI Level 5 Early Childhood Care and Education students with early years employers from across the county. We brought on a guest speaker just to make the day that extra bit special as well, but for us, it offered local employers from across the whole early years sector an opportunity to meet with our students, and they could assess their suitability for any positions that they had. But equally, Kieran, our students were able to meet the employers and get leads on potential positions or work experience opportunities. It honestly was a great event, and it's something that we would really like to repeat when conditions are safe to do so again. But I think we'd also maybe like to try it in areas like healthcare as well. I suppose, Karen, if I could add one more wee thing, just I suppose in what we were talking about here, I'd love to expand on the role of the guidance counsellor in preparing our students for the world of work. We often will approach local businesses to volunteer on our mock interview panels or maybe give us industry-specific talks. It's a fantastic way of us showcasing this FET talent pool that we have, but we are also building up relationships with those local businesses. We get real-time information about what's needed for the labour market in Donegal, and our students get a really authentic experience of an interview, albeit, you know, it's a simulated environment. But we're always looking to expand our pool of speakers or interviewers. So if you have any of your Business Matters listeners there that would be interested in teaming up with us, we would be really delighted to strengthen our networks. And of course, you know, we do this while working along with our colleagues in enterprise engagement, Dervla Kelly and Donna McDade.
There, that's been a great insight. Thanks for that. And just for those interested in reaching out to your service, how can they make contact?
Yeah, well, it's a wee bit of a whistle-stop tour there, but if you've heard anything at all that you'd like to know more about, you can give us a call on 07491 78088, or you can email us at adultguidance@donegaletb.ie, and that's adult guidance, all one word, Ciarán.
Great. Deirdre McColgan, Adult Guidance Counsellor and Coordinator of Donegal ETB's Adult Guidance and Information Service, thanks for taking the time to talk to us on Business Matters.
Thank you for this opportunity, Ciarán. Thank you.
And still to come, we'll be catching up with Box Office and Marketing Manager at Ingredion Theatre, Dahi Ramsey.
Are you working in the hospitality industry? Would you like to lead or supervise your team effectively? Donegal ETB is now recruiting for its next diploma in Leadership and Management, tailored specifically for the hospitality industry. Contact Enterprise Engagement at donegaletb.ie or call 07491 20500.
You're welcome back. Dahi Ramsey has been Box Office and Marketing Manager at Ingredion Theatre in Letterkenny since it opened in 1999. Over the last 22 years, Dahi has seen the theatre on Port Road evolve into one of the best entertainment venues in the country. While lockdown has meant no audiences, the shows are still going on, as Dahi told me when we spoke in the theatre's empty foyer.
Yeah, Ciarán, we're currently recording 6 short plays, which will be going out across our social media, so they'll be 5 to 10 minutes each. And the brief of them, I suppose, was to be funny and uplifting. You know, I think we all need to laugh at this point. And I suppose for us, you know, social media has become more and more important, and particularly in the last year, you know, the digital world, the websites, the online media, is now our stage. It's how we interact with our audience, connect with our audience, and how they see what we're doing. So it's very important for us to have those.
In relation to the traffic, have you an idea of the level of engagement or the increase in the level of engagement over the last while?
In terms of the online? I suppose it depends, and it we'd see changes in various areas of it. So visits to the website would be down. Interestingly, the email openings are up. People are looking to see what we're actually doing that way. When we have stuff out there, when we have videos out there or information out there, yeah, there's great interaction on the Facebook. It's very different for us because up until now, I suppose, our focus has been very much on selling the next show. And this is a very different type of engagement we're doing with people now.
Talk to me a bit about the show that's been put together at the minute. How long will that take to put together, and what audience is aimed at?
Yeah, the show that's on the stage at the moment, The Lesson, by Peggy Caldwell. Basically what we've done throughout this year, we've taken our grants and repurposed them. And what we've been trying to do, a lot of the money would have been earmarked for putting shows on the stage, which is a very costly business to put on live performances, as I think everybody knows. So we've had certain monies available, and what we've done is used it to develop writers, actors, artists, to make sure that artists are getting paid in the Northwest to support people. So this was part of a call out we put across social media and through various channels for writers to write plays for us, 5 to 10 minutes, uplifting, funny, engaging, that would deliberately be put out on social media. So obviously it has to fit within the rules of social media. It has to be family friendly, you know, no cursing, you know, simple things like that. You know, subject matters have to be suitable for all the family. But we got a phenomenal response. We had 52 scripts came back to us, full scripts, you know, came back to us. And what's been phenomenal with this and the bursaries we did before Christmas is we've engaged with so many people that I never knew were out there doing this work, the writers who are out there doing the work. There's just so many more people in the Northwest than we ever thought. You'd have thought in 20 years of the theatre being here that people out there who are interested in theatre, writing plays, would have popped in the door and said hello. And a certain amount do, but there's obviously a lot more didn't until we put out the call. And I guess that call is part of us saying, we want to hear what you're doing, you know, or it's given permission to people to send their stuff to us. So it's been phenomenal and it's been really positive.
Moving forward, what are your hopes and expectations for 2021 when things open up again?
Yeah, I suppose from my point of view, from a marketing point of view, you know, I get asked, will you be able to get, you know, when you open up again and put shows on, do you think the audience will come straight back? And I keep saying, I'm not worried about that at all, because what's going to happen is we're going to have small audiences first. Instead of the 400, we'll be starting with 50 capacity. You know, because of the regulations, because of social distancing, you came through, you saw that there are a lot of seats marked out, you know, do not sit here. You know, we have it marked out. I think it's for about 80 people there. So I'm expecting it to be 50, 80, 120 and to build up people's, you know, interest that way. So I don't expect us to be back at a week of, you know, a local group doing 400 people a night, you know, 60 people backstage in the cast. I think we're probably looking at 2022 before that.
There was big excitement when the theatre opened back in 1999. You were there then, you're still here.
Yep.
What was it like to be part of the startup team of the theatre back then?
The startup was fantastic. I mean, it was just such a buzz. It was so exciting for us. And I think that's one of the reasons so many of the original management team have stayed. I think we feel a real pride and ownership. It's very much a family, you know, and I think it is very much a family. You know, it's that thing of you're working in a place 20 years, and I know you did the same in the Democrat, where you're spending more time with your colleagues than your actual family. So you have those relationships and you can fall out at times and you can give out, but you're all pulling in the same direction, essentially, you know. But it was, I mean, I can remember the opening night here, standing at the doors, welcoming everybody, and it was just fantastic. And, I mean, it was a very different landscape in terms of entertainment. Obviously, it was before things like Netflix and Amazon Prime, but also there was no Millennium Forum, no Strool, no Alley. The Baller hadn't, was in the old building. You know, our Clinquy Door, again, hadn't been renovated as it had now. So we had a huge area to ourselves, and I think we capitalised on, I mean, we did a phenomenal amount of shows. I think we did nearly 300 shows over the first year, and we did great audiences, and I think we really capitalised on that Northwest thing.
You mentioned the first show. What was the first show, the first night? Can you remember?
Well, I can, but there's two first shows in a sense. Right. The very first show was The Magic of the Musicals, and it was local Letterkenny performers putting on shows from the musicals. And then the official opening was a show called Trasnu, which was put together. And you had people like Moya Brennan, you had Brendan DeGalley, Alton, and people like that. The reason there were kind of two openings was because they were still building the building. And I remember distinctly, you know, trying to sell tickets on the phone and asking a guy to stop drilling behind me. We actually threw the builders out for the opening. And then they came back the next day. I mean, it was, yeah. But that all added to the excitement and the fun for us, you know.
Di, have you any idea how many shows have been staged or how many seats have been filled over the last 22 years?
Oh, I don't know the current numbers. I do know we passed a million quite some years ago. So
that's a major milestone, isn't
it? I remember that, yeah. I remember that particularly, yeah. No, it's been very busy. And, you know, I mean, the success of it is that everyone here thinks of it as their theatre. You know, everybody in Letterkenny and the surrounding districts think of it as their theatre, and it is. You know, and that has been the success of it.
How important do you feel that the theatre has been for Letterkenny, Donegal and the North West?
Yeah, I think it's been very important in terms of, I mean, if you go to, I mean, in diverse areas, I mean, if you go to things like Primerica's website, you know, we're listed prominently on that. When they're trying to attract people to come and work in Letterkenny, they're saying, we have a theatre. You know, we have the Aura Leisure Centre. You know, we're an important part of an amenity in a town. I think, you know, when I was growing up as a kid in the 70s, it was a community centre. Every town had to have a community centre. And that was a mark of where the town was at. You know, and I think in the 90s, the noughties, theatres became important in that way, in terms of it's a very important part of the infrastructure of a town. What it's done for, I mean, we have a number of young actors now who've come through here. You know, Patrick McBrearty, you know, Patrick Quinn, who's just finished at Queen's and is doing great things for himself. You know, we of course, our best, you know, our star out there is Amy Beth McNulty, who was the star of Anne with an E. You know, Amy Beth did many years with us at on the youth theatre and various camps we ran. And I guess, like, for me growing up in the 80s, I got sent to art college by the careers guidance teacher because I was creative. And that was all they could think of. You're creative, so you go and do art. So I did a year of art. You know, I'm not saying it was a wasted year, you know, but I'm not an artist, you know, and it was trying to find that. So we're showing people that there are careers here. You know, we've had 20 years of training technicians here through our community employment scheme. And as far as I know, everyone who's come through as a technician is working. You know, so we're showing people that there are different careers in the arts, and giving them that impetus to go and do it.
And Graydon has hosted many big names in the world of comedy, music and drama. Is there a standout performance that comes to mind?
That's a very good question, Kieran. And, you know, funnily enough, we were kind of talking about that at lunchtime today amongst ourselves. So I'm slightly ahead of that. I mean, my great love is comedy and music. And I guess I've programmed a lot of the comedy and music over the years here because I've had that. So I think in that, I mean, Dylan Mourne was amazing. Bill Bailey was amazing. Johnny Vegas was one of the most incredible shows I've ever seen. And I don't think he does much stand-up anymore. Obviously, the star of Benidorm. But he was an incredible performance. John Aston, who was one of the original Adams family, he did a show about Edgar Allan Poe, and it was astonishing, really, you know. But then there's, you know, there's Irish people as well. Michael Murphy's an incredible actor. We were talking today about the great Anna Manahan from Druid Theatre Company, who did the Beauty Queen Lynn Ann in her early days, and she was stunning. I mean, I was saying it was the first theatre performance that hit me, because I hadn't seen a lot of theatre, because, you know, before I came to work here. And that was, you know, you're just seeing the power of a live performance and someone who can really do it. David Gray was a great gig. That was really special, I think, you know. So yeah, lot of good stuff. Desmond Dekker, the Jamaican ska, obviously a great interest of mine, the 1960s, who sang the Israelites, people remember him for. That was a real great gig. And the one gig in the auditorium whereby, like, everybody's sitting down because it's a seated auditorium. And after the end of the first song, he just went, "Why are you all sitting down?" And the whole place got up and danced for the whole night, which was quite special.
The role of marketing has changed significantly over the last 20 years. Talk to me a bit about the change and the change in your role and the change of having to diversify and get the same message out in so many different ways.
Yeah, I suppose when we first started, you know, I got 4 black and white headshots of actors in a play, and I got a typed up press release, and I wandered around the newspaper offices and had that, you know, we'd have a nice Thursday dropping in and drinking tea with the journalists and having a great time and, you know, popping up to Highland. You know, and it was a much more relaxed job. The brochure was king. You know, we produced 4 brochures a year, and that would have been a huge amount of our work was collating the brochures. I mean, I think at that stage in the early days, we were printing 35,000 copies 4 times a year and distributing those. So that was a major part of the work. And I suppose in many ways, I mean, one of the things is we've a fixed audience because your audience is coming primarily from an hour's drive around you. So while the online world and I mean, there's so many newspapers now as well, you know, the newspapers really grew. Servicing everybody doesn't bring us any more customers. We have to do so many more things, you know, and like, I suppose the modern development now is video. You know, we have to produce video. So we have to produce the video, we have to produce the radio ad, we have to produce the content for LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, you know, TikTok is something we're looking at. But you're not bringing in any more people, essentially, or you're not hitting any more people. You have to do so much more work, I suppose, is what I'm saying, to hit the same number of people. And that makes it much more difficult, much busier. As I say, the technology's moved incredibly, and our skills with it, really. But I suppose, in a way, the upskilling, I mean, I've spent the last year video editing. That's been the main skill I've been working on for the last year, you know. I know my colleague Nicola's been doing a deep dive into Google Analytics, you know, and these are the skills you acquire. But also, it keeps you interested. You know, you don't want the job to be the same. I don't think I'd be here after 20 years if things didn't move on, if there wasn't a new interest to grab onto.
Pre-COVID, Di, can you give me a typical week or a typical season in the life of Ingraining?
Yeah, I guess, and I suppose it's seasonal as well. So our big time is kind of October to March. So the dark evenings is when people want to go see a show. Ideally here. I suppose, I mean, the building will be going during that time, probably from about 7 a.m. to about 11 or 12 at night. So the cleaners will be in first, and they'll be doing their daily roundup of everything. The box office, the admin, the cafe people landing in around sort of between 9 and 10. And they'll do, you know, the cafe will start up, the admin will be doing their work, the box office will be dealing with their work, you know, lunchtime will be busy in the cafe. And then in the afternoons, the technicians will turn up because they've got the show in the evening. So they'll start preparing for their show in the evening. And then I suppose about 5 o'clock, almost one shift leaves. And then the next shift comes in, the next box office shift, the ushers, the duty manager who's running the show that night, extra technicians who are running the show, they'll come in, you know, get prepared for the audience. And then the audience arrives, so the bar's running, you know, get everybody upstairs. I mean, there's, you know, there's that short window where the duty manager like has 50 minutes to get everybody a drink and get them upstairs. So they get up, you know, they watch the show. So that'll be 10, half 10, maybe 11. You know, the ushers will go home, the duty manager will go home, the technicians will finish up their work. They'll have to look after the auditorium, and then it all starts again the next day. So it's pretty going, you know, it's pretty busy.
When you're not overseeing all those duties and all those jobs, what do you do in your spare time?
Outside of here. I suppose, I mean, I've always had a lot of different interests, really. Obviously, I mean, I've been following the harps since I was a young fella, selling programmes at 10 for the harps outside up in Balbuffet with my brother Bartley, who of course wrote the book about harps, literally. So I mean, I follow the harps, I follow Leeds United, who finally after 16 years are back in the Premier League, which we thought was the promised land, but obviously they tried to put a Super League on top of it, but we'll not go into that. So there's that. I do a little bit of surfing, although not being near a surfing beach at home, the pandemic kind of cut me off from that. So it'll be interesting to see when I get back in if I still have any muscles left for it. But that's a great feeling. And it really clears the head in a sense. You know, when you're out there in the Atlantic, you can think of nothing else, which is great. I have a garage full of projects, which I'm very good at taking apart and not so good at putting back together. So I have scooters, Vespers, Lambrettas. I have a 1972 Volkswagen camper van, which finally got on the road about 4 years ago after 8 years in the garage, you know, and got there. And I suppose, you know, the projects kind of reflect, I suppose, part of me and how I work. I'm very good at the broad strokes. I'm a natural problem solver. That's me. I'm always there for, oh, is there an idea? You know, when people say the difficult thing is coming up with the ideas, I've never seen that. I have 12 before lunchtime My difficulty is not saying them, because if I said them all, I'd have to do them all. But what I think I've learned about life very much from working here and from working in my garage is, you know, I suppose the secret of business, I think, and the secret of life is gather good people around you and let them get on with their job, assign them whatever they're meant to do and get on with it. And I suppose within that, you know, my attention to detail and to finishing, I'm not that good at the last polish of things. But then, as I say, my colleague Nicola, who I mentioned earlier, she's brilliant at that. Absolutely brilliant. You know, and she has an unusual range of skills. She's very valuable because she was an art student. Visually, she's brilliant. She's great technically. But she's also a great writer, and she's done, you know, she's done degrees in English grammar at the Open University, you know, and things like that that, you know, really pay off and really benefit. So I suppose over the years, she's here nearly as long as me, we slot into roles. So I'll do this bit, she does that bit, you know, and that's, I think, as I say, I think that's the secret to success. I think that is the secret of a good team, is people having their roles and skills and fitting together.
And finally, Di, what does the future hold for yourself and Green & Theatre?
You know, I thought a lot about this during the pandemic. I suppose we were laid off for 3 months, and I spent 3 months in my garden. I realised I'm not a gardener, by the way, but it's definitely not in gardening. But I spent 3 months in my garden, and I was thinking, is this it? Do I go off and change? Do I take a different direction? And actually, no. I like it here. I think, you know, I've got 12, 13 years to retirement, and I think I'll be here. I think I'll be learning. And as I say, you know, it's changed so much. I'm excited to see what changes happen in the next 12 years. I mean, the big thing of the pandemic, as I say, has been recording shows and broadcasting them. And I think it's very much, so that's something that theatre had really avoided, because they were all about the live experience and the audiences. And 100% I want that back. It's a very special thing. But I think the recorded experience offers us ways of meeting. You know, there are people with mobility issues, there are people with access issues, there are transport issues in Donegal, and the online allows them a way in that maybe, or, you know, people are working shifts in the hospital maybe, 8 o'clock on a Thursday evening doesn't suit them, but the recorded that they can watch at any time that suits them, you know, helps us meet that audience, which I think is very important. So I think that it's kind of, once the genie's out of the bottle, it isn't going back in. I think the recorded element will stay with us. And the standards of recording, the standards of editing, you know, when I first started editing stuff, I was just happy to clip it together, you know, and now I've spent, you know, weeks looking at colour balancing. You know, the more you go into it, the more you realise you know nothing, in a sense of there's so much more to learn. And those are the things that excite me. So I think I'll be here for the 12, 13 years. And I think in Green, and, you know, I think we've had a lot of time to focus this last year or two. And I think it's brilliant, because what we've really focused on is the local area, the local performers, artists, you know, both amateur and professional, the local writers, the local producers. And I think our focus will be so much more on that. We've always done it to an extent, but I think we got very busy with feeding the stage, which happens in a building. You know, if you're running a hall, it's booking out the hall, essentially, at times. You know, you get hooked into that. And I think we've had time to look at it, that I think our focus will be even more on lifting up local people.
Di Ramsay, box office and marketing manager at Ingredients Theatre in Letterkenny, thanks for taking the time to talk to us on Business Matters.
Kieran, thanks very much. That was great.
Well, that's it for this edition of Business Matters. Thanks to my guests, Garrett Hart, Di Ramsay and Deirdre McCaughan. Thanks to Kenneth Wilson on sound. And thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, drop an email to businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Business Matters, in association with Donegal ETBs for their education and training service, developing the Donegal workforce across the engineering, hospitality, manufacturing, retail, services, technology and agricultural sectors.